Welcome back, everyone, to The Zamarin Show. I'm your host, James Montemagno, and I'm so excited, all the way from Australia, my good, good friend and fan and friend of the show, Matthew Robbins, is with me. How's it going, Matthew?
Good, James. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I mean, you made the journey all the way from Australia, enjoying beautiful, sunshiny Seattle, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was a bit of a temperature drop, but that's all right.
It's about like 80, 90 Fahrenheit, I assume, in...
Over 100.
Over 100. Hot. Yeah.
It was very, very warm.
Yeah, so it's nice in a balmy 30, 40 degrees here.
Yes.
But I don't think it rained too much.
Just a little bit.
A little bit?
I'm from Melbourne, so I'm used to it.
Okay, perfect. Yep. Beautiful. So today I'm super excited just to have you on. You've been working on some amazing tooling for Xamarin Studio and hopefully soon Visual Studio for Mac. And once I saw it and I installed it and I played around with you, I'm like, I got to have you on the show. But I knew you're in Australia and you're like, psh, I'll fly over, no big deal. So you made it. I'm happy.
Yeah. Well, any excuse to travel, really.
That's true. And Australians, yep. We know Australians. I love to travel. Everywhere I go, I love to travel, too. I'm always running into Australians all the time.
Yep.
It's a thing. I don't know what it is. There's love life.
Yeah. You
know? So first off, tell people a little bit about yourself and what you're going to show today.
Yeah. So my name is Matthew Robbins. I'm a Xamarin and Microsoft MVP. And I've been working in the Xamarin space for roughly 4 or 5 years now. Over the course of this time, I've built many, many apps, so from Xamarin Native to Xamarin Forms. And roughly 2 years ago, I decided to start building tooling for Xamarin. I wanted to fix some workflow problems that I had. It originally just started out as an idea that I would be able to right-click on a layout in Android, and I could pull in all the controls and generate all the C#. So that was the original idea.
Yeah.
Still haven't done it, but I've done an awful lot since then. Mostly centered around Xamarin Forms and just trying to improve the way we build apps.
Yeah. I really love the idea, Frank on our podcast, Merge Conflict, we did an entire episode on IDE extensions and kind of how cool is it that you can take these crazy IDEs that like developers spent tons and tons of times on, but then we can really craft tools that we care about for our workflow.
Yep.
And then you start to realize that, oh, it's not just us, right? Everyone else also wants these things, these little missing pieces that are kind of like these corner cases at first,
yep.
And then sort of turn into, but what if it did this? What if it did this? That's how I started with templates originally. I was like, man, I like our templates, but I don't love our templates, so what if I made my own templates? And I think it's so cool that we have this ability to do it, and not a lot of developers know how to do it, but I work mostly with Visual Studio extensions, but
yep.
You did Xamarin Studio extensions, is that
yes.
correct? Yeah, and how was that journey?
A very, very steep learning curve, to be perfectly honest. The actual extension model is not very well documented, mm-hmm. so you end up reading and understanding the source code very well. I feel like I'm so much better as a developer just because I've had to like tear apart MonoDevelop to actually get anything to work.
Yeah.
So it's difficult, but it's really, really rewarding.
Yeah. I like that. So that's about the story that I've heard a few times. But the nice thing is that Xamarin Studio is open source,
yep.
right? Via MonoDevelop, which is from that long lineage of open source. So did you just go to the GitHub page or wherever it was hosted and you just dive through the source code, or did you find some other sample projects out there?
So my introduction to this was, like, I start off in the MonoDevelop source code, just yeah. like poking around. There's a sample where you just generate a date time into your source code. Mm-hmm. So I started off with that and just got an idea of how it all worked. Then I reached out to Michaela Hutchinson, mm-hmm. who is one of the product managers at Xamarin. Mm-hmm. And I said, I want to do this stuff.
Yeah.
And she kind of pointed me down the right track. And it just escalated from there.
And it turned into what you're going to be showing today, which
it did.
Is correct. It's called mFracture.
That's correct.
Yes, which comes from?
So it's a mashup of the word mono and refactor.
Okay.
So back in the day, about 2 years ago, I was struggling for a name, and I'm just like, oh, what about if I just mangle these two words and see what happens?
Beautiful.
Yep.
So what is mFracture, essentially? Is in a nutshell, what's your 30-second elevator pitch of it?
In a nutshell, it's a collection of incredible tools for Xamarin Studio. So it currently focuses on forms development, so it adds XAML analysis, navigation shortcuts, refactoring, code generation, a whole slew of very, very useful tools.
Okay. Yeah. And then do you do anything that's not Xamarin Forms, like some iOS or Android stuff?
Do some Android stuff. Okay. So my original focus was on Android, mm-hmm. but I pivoted into Forms because that's what I've been working in for the last year and a half.
Yeah.
So it adds resource analysis, resource IntelliSense, Some navigation improvements. There's a few bits and pieces there.
Yeah, because I feel like the IDEs themselves have done a really good job with Roslyn support and doing the analyzing of it. But when it came to XAML analysis, even when I did Windows development, the XAML analysis was good, but not always exactly what I wanted. You know, to say no one was doing like a code gen really from I know that's out there. And those are kind of those cool extension points. So I'm super excited to see what you have. Do you just want to jump into it?
Sure.
Yeah. Where do I even get it from? I know this is the logo.
Yes, this is the logo. Yeah. To get it, you go to www.mfractor, M-F-R-A-C-T-O-R.
And we'll put it in the show notes below.
Yep. You can either press the big blue download now button.
Nice and easy.
Yep. And that'll take you to it. And then just click on the download mFractor link.
Okay.
And that'll download it for you.
So this is an MPAC file, and that's the...
That's the extension format for a MonoDevelop add-in, or a Visual Studio for Mac add-in now, actually.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, so if you're probably used to Visual Studio, they have the VSIX,
yeah.
Very similar, essentially. This is the pack.
Yeah, it's basically like a bundle with some like manifest information.
Okay. So once you have it, then what do you do?
Then we can jump on over to mFractor's documentation website. Mm. So you can either click on the docs.mfractor.com link, or we can enter it manually.
Okay.
But there's instructions here for setting up and installing it. So we can go in and learn how to get it, learn how to install it. So currently you have to install manually, which would involve, if we go into Xamarin Studio, we go to the top menu, so the Xamarin Studio menu, then click Add-ins, and then there's Install from File.
Yeah.
And then you would just browse to wherever the MPAC is.
Got
and
it.
It would just install.
Got it. And if people may have never even seen this dialogue before, this is kind of, so there's this extension manager that's on there, and then there's a lot of stuff in there already. So I know
there is,
like,
yeah.
John Dick has my favorite, he has like an obliterate folder extension.
That yeah.
That deletes all your bin and obj. So normally if you want to, you could have it come up in here, or just literally if you're developing one, you just install from file and it's
yeah.
the same.
So if you want to, like, if you're developing one, you want to test it, you make the MPAC yourself, and then install it like a user would, and it's a great way of just of testing it.
Very cool.
Once it's installed, it will add its repository for you.
Oh, cool.
And that would just comes in as part of the updating system, so you'll get free updates.
Oh, so I don't have to. Once I install it once, I don't have to worry about it again.
Yeah, Xamarin Studio daily polls the remote endpoints.
Nice.
So it just checks for an update each day.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah, right. And then it'll just work.
Then it's installed. Do I got to close Xamarin Studio? Got to do anything like that? Or
you shouldn't need to. Like,
okay.
I have seen it work without restarting Xamarin Studio, but I would recommend restarting Xamarin Studio.
Yeah.
Just because it's best practice, right?
Yeah. So even in Visual Studio and Xamarin Studio, I always shut it down, reopen, because you know there's a lot of things happening over there. But you already have it installed.
I do.
And what are you going to show us here today? What is this? I see some PCI stuff.
Yeah, mostly we'll go through the four key areas that it focuses on. So that's navigation, code analysis, code generation, and refactoring.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, so we're just going to work with the XAML document and just going to walk you through the workflow improvements.
Okay.
Cool.
Let's do it. Yeah, I'm in.
All right.
I see some XAML. I like XAML.
Yep.
I'm a big XAML fan.
Yeah.
And content page, I'm in.
Cool. So the immediate thing that you'll notice here is we have this little yellow squiggle here.
Mm-hmm.
So when mFractor detects that a XAML document loads up, it injects its analyzer.
Okay.
What this does is it inspects your document for a whole range of issues, and there's a full list of them up here, actually. So we can go to the documentation website and then the analyzers menu, and here it has a full list of what mFractor checks for.
Oh, wow, cool.
So there's currently 46 different checks, and that grows as I encounter them.
Got it.
So I guess the summary of this is every time I get stung by something, an mFractor user will benefit from my pain.
Got
so,
it. Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So what this is doing here is it's the namespace analyzer is checking for namespace usages, and it's going through your document, analyzing or inspecting for usages of the local namespace. And then annotating the top point.
So this is very similar to probably like the using statement analyzer
yeah.
that you developers are used to, where you know you bring in a new document, it has like 18,000 different using statements,
yeah.
but you only use two of them. So you just right-click and say remove or add stuff in, and you can reorganize and things like that.
Yeah, so it really makes things much, much easier to work with.
You don't want to load up extra namespaces
yeah.
if you don't have to, right?
Yeah, it's bloat to your document. You don't need it.
Got it.
Next thing, it would be the navigation. So
okay.
one of the first things that I added was tooltips. So if you want to view more information about anything in the XAML document, you can simply hover over any element, and it pulls out the .NET style tooltip with the class information, the documentation, and it also tells you that you can command D to go to declaration, or we can right click and do go to XAML symbol.
Oh, cool.
And so that jumps you to the corresponding symbol.
Very nice.
And that's really useful for just jumping around and
yeah.
just like navigating more effectively.
Well, and just if you want to see what that property means or what it does.
Yeah.
Because as you're typing it, does anything pop up when you type it? When you just type in content page?
I don't believe it does.
If you go into label.
Oh, actually, no, it does.
You get a little bit, right? But
yeah.
you don't get the full thing. So if you do a content view or even that label, you can hover over anything.
Yeah, so if I hover over the label,
it
renders out the full inheritance chain.
Got it.
The summary, it says that you can jump to the declaration as well.
Yeah. Very cool.
Additionally, there's a few other pieces of information that can be injected into tooltips. So if I added an image, for instance, mm-hmm. and I connected the source up, and I put it to, I think it's icon.png.
Oh, cool.
So Infractor behind the scenes will inspect through your linked Android and iOS projects. Mm. And provided it can resolve the image name, it'll pull out that image and render it into a tooltip. And that's really useful for actually seeing what you're working with.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, I know there's a lot of times I actually don't know if an image resource...
Did I name it correctly
yeah.
in there? Yeah. Often I have so many, right, in so many different folders.
Yeah.
Like, oh, did I name it correctly? Is it actually in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. And
one last thing is if you did a color, for instance, we can hover over the color link. And it will render the color in as well.
Oh, very nice.
So that's just a few of the tooltip improvements.
Yeah.
Another like navigation improvement that I've really worked hard to improve. So in Xamarin Forms, you end up cycling between your view model, your code behind, and your view a lot. And it's a big time sink. So one of the tooling improvements is the ability to cycle through those three core files easily.
Like a REPL for your code.
Yeah.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah. So if you right click, you can jump between the code behind and the view.
Okay.
So we can just click on that, and it will jump into the code behind. Of course, it's not going to work.
Is there code behind?
There is.
This one. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. And Roslyn needed to collect the information.
Got it.
So we can quickly jump backwards and forwards between our two core classes. We can also do this for our view model. So I'll quickly generate some code generation capabilities. So if we right click just anywhere in the page.
Anywhere in the page.
We can select implement view model. And so that will take the naming convention for that page. So because it's called Hello Mfractor page, it considers the page to be a view.
Yeah.
So it'll drop the page off the end. Use the Hello Mfractor and then append view model when it's building the view model. And so that's just a really quick way of building a view model for your page.
Yeah, I like that. So like usually when I go in, I right click, add a page, add a page, add a page. And I scaffold my pages and then I literally go, add new C# file, add new C# file.
Yeah.
And then I have to rename them all and make sure that they're matching because I'm a stickler for names, right? But this one just does it for you automatically. What does this property change I implement property?
Oh, so because I've got Fodi's property weaving installed.
What is Fodi property weaving?
So it'll inject the iNotify property changed event into your code for you. So you would derive from iNotify
property change. We've all done this, or I have an MVVM helper class that does this type of thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
So rather than doing all this work, Fodi will weave that in for you when you have this attribute on the root class.
So now, is that class. Something that you include in Mfractor, or is that a separate download?
It's a detection. So
okay, got it.
When you have Fodi included,
got it.
It will inject that for you.
Oh, very nice.
Otherwise, it would just strip. It would just strip out the property change, and you just have a vanilla class.
Got it.
Yep.
That makes sense.
But I use Fodi because I dislike all that manual work.
Yeah. Perfect. Cool.
Yeah. So because we've got a view model now and a page and a code behind, the MVVM cycling shortcuts are now completely active.
Oh.
So we could jump from our view model to our view. Mm. So it's a very, very quick way of just getting around. Or we could jump from our view to our view model.
Yeah.
And so this solution's fairly small. It's the actual cost of finding this stuff is not very hard.
Sure.
But when you start getting into a bigger app, so for instance, at my main job, we have an app with 50, 60 pages,
yeah,
a whole bunch of different controls. We do view models for view cells. It gets out of hand really quickly.
Yeah.
So provided you've named things consistently, Infractor lets you cycle between those files and find things really quickly.
Now, is the page attribute in the view model, view model's pretty much, what if someone did view at the end instead of page? Are there a few different hot keywords?
So the two main keywords is page and view.
Okay, got it.
So if you have view, page, it'll work.
Perfect.
So if we can jump back into there, and because we've got a view model now, we can start building out some properties.
Yeah, I like that.
So easiest way to do that is if we just take out that hello Infractor, we can make a binding.
And if you don't know about data binding, I'll put some links in the show notes to my episode that I talked all about what this binding message means, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what we're saying here is we're connecting the text property on the label to a message property on our view model.
Yeah.
Historically, you would not know that this was a potential issue just at the moment. So that message property does not exist on your view model just yet.
Now, does it know about my view model?
Yeah. So it's inferred by the naming conventions what your intended use
is. Got it. Because you could also put a binding context inside of this.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. So I mean, we could manually specify the binding context.
Got it. And then it would use the binding context instead of the inference, I guess.
Yeah. And then Infractor would honor this one rather.
Got it.
So if I use the local namespace, detection will disappear. We can add a view model locator. And we can link it up. There's actually a good opportunity to generate the code, to demonstrate the code generation. Again, Infractor evaluates expressions.
Yeah.
And it will analyze to see if classes exist in assemblies and namespaces. And we can generate that entire class with the property.
Oh, cool.
So that takes out a lot of work.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'd be making that file through a right click and then adding it and coding everything out ourselves. But we'll just link this up manually.
Got it. Okay. So it'll just create some new view models for it. And view model locator is like a nice way of statically saying that. I did this a lot with MVVM Lite back in the day with Laurent. Essentially is saying like, hey, this is a static class. This page belongs to this thing. Yeah. I don't want it to create new ones. Just go create one new whenever I call it, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is just
it's like design time almost.
Yeah. Convenience pattern.
Yeah. And then boom, it goes away. It knows that you used everything.
Yeah, and because it analyzes expressions and it consumes them, we can actually hover over that expression, and it will pull out the information and give us the ability to also jump to it.
Very cool.
So we could click on that and jump to.
Nice.
So that's another time saver.
Yeah.
Because the other way would be we'd have to.
You'll find it. My view model,
And we've got all these collisions in here. It's a mess. It's hard to find things.
Yeah.
But back to the binding.
Yeah, yeah. Now that I've totally sidetracked us.
Small segue, but it's a good one. So Infractor does implicit resolution. So if we didn't specify the binding context, it would, in the same way that for the navigation, it considers the view model and the page related because of the Hello Infractor component. It does the same thing for analysis.
Gotcha.
So if you've named things similarly, it assumes a default binding context and enables analysis for all bindings.
Hmm.
So in this case, it's consumed the binding expression, and it's inspecting for a message property on our view model.
Got it. And it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It tells it. It does not find it.
Yeah.
No bueno.
So this is really useful because otherwise when we run it, We actually don't know about this error until runtime.
Yeah.
So we'd have to start our app up, wait for the compilation, wait for the simulator to boot or to deploy to the phone, navigate through the pages, and then eventually with the binding expression, it's not even going to work and it won't even crash.
Yeah, it just won't, nothing will happen.
Yeah.
So yeah, I find often that you have compile time XAML, so if you spell binding incorrect, let's say it'll tell you that at error time, but it's not inspecting your view model, doesn't know that link.
Yep.
And then the binding is null, so it's just like, I don't know what to do. Yeah.
Yeah. This way, it adds some smarts to it,
and
it just takes out the potential for runtime issues.
I've seen this time and time again on my GitHub, where I see like issues come up, and then they'll be resolved like by the creator like an hour later, like, oh, I mistyped something, you know, type of thing. Totally happens. I've been there. It's okay.
Yeah. So part of this is like, I hate getting stung by things at runtime, and I'd like to like improve how we work. So this is like the whole point of this.
Cool.
And so you see that we've got a little yellow squiggle beneath it. So there's two different types of squiggles. You've got a red one, which is, it's an issue, but I can't actually do anything about it. Just want to let you know that it's something's going to break.
Got it.
And yellow squiggles in MFractor are, there's an issue, but I can do something about that.
Got it.
I can fix it. And the way to fix it is to just click on the span that's yellow squiggled. So I can just click on that, right click on that.
Okay.
And then go to fix. And I can either make a property name message. So that would be a vanilla property with a getter and setter, and that's it.
Yep.
Or I can make it the backing field if you would like some logic to go in behind it.
Sure.
So I'll just make a property and it will open up the view model with an insertion point. And you just press enter.
Cool.
And MFractor will resolve the type information for you. So it's a string because the text is a string. It'll pull that out and insert it in.
So if you did one for the text color, it would do a binding to the color, right? It's
like,
oh, this is a color. It knows what the type is. It's smart. It's not just gonna be an object.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's actually a good opportunity to demonstrate some refactoring. So
all right, I'm ready. Let's do it.
If we did want to bind the text color to something and we wanted to preserve the aqua value, we have two ways of doing that. We could either click on that and then write out the binding expression, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Make the property, then wire it up.
Yeah.
In 2.8, I introduced extraction to property binding refactoring.
Mm.
So you can just right click and go refactor. And we can extract it into a property binding.
Okay.
And we'll just call that text color because we're creative.
Yep.
And then enter.
Oh, cool. Look at that.
And then if we jump back to the view. So I've just done an update. So this is pretty
hot bits, I like to say. But it's there and it knows it.
Yeah, it knows it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's nice because often I'll put in some weird, like I won't just use aqua, I'll use like pound 0058, whatever, some color inside of there.
Yeah.
Where I really should be putting it into my app.xaml. But sometimes I just want to keep that value, and then this will just at least create the backing field for me, which is really nice. Yeah. Does that work with any property, like the image source or like any, basically anything that can be bindable, you can bind it?
And anything that has a bindable property component. So there's the source property, but there's also a source property named property.
Property, got
which
it.
Is the bindable property for the source.
Mm.
So anything that has a bindable property correlation, it will use that.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. All right, so next up, one of the newer features that I did to clean up XAML is namespace refactoring.
Okay, yeah.
I'll just restart that with the source editor. So what we can do now is if we want to rename namespaces throughout our document, we can just right-click on the top declaration and do, for instance, my app.
Boom.
And it will rename the XML declaration and also the my app declaration.
Yeah, it's nice because often I start creating controls and I have like controls, my controls, this sort of thing, controls, this other control, you know?
Yeah.
You start bringing a lot of third-party libraries that are in there.
Yeah, and it's so easy to accidentally import things a few times. So,
yeah.
For instance, if we had like the CLI namespace, Hello Infractor, and we had it as both local and my app. It's a Drupal declaration. You don't actually need it.
Yeah.
And say we used it in here as well. So I just set the binding context in here.
Sure.
And we set that to local. We have two duplicate declarations that both point to the same thing. There's a new fix in Infractor 2.9 that lets you compress them all to the same namespace.
Oh, nice.
So you can just right-click and it will rename them all to whatever the namespace is that you want.
Yeah.
But that's just a
nice little touch. Yeah.
Just keeping things clean, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, and also like it's so easy to overlook those things in your code.
Yeah.
Because as you're jamming on code and you're just like nonstop code, and you're like, oh, I'm doing this revision, that revision, I'm pulling in this control and that control, and then you copy code from one file to another file, and you're like, oh, you know, now I have all this stuff. But you don't realize it, and then it's just kind of bloat. You know?
And then eventually like it gets out of hand, it starts looking messy, and it's a pain to maintain.
Yeah.
On the maintenance note, some of the newer features that I've been adding are on the keeping your XAML tidy. So, say for instance, you wanted to keep things aligned on separate lines of the same line.
Mm-hmm.
We can now right-click on any node, and you can, for instance, collapse them onto the same line.
Cool.
Or you could expand them all out into separate lines.
Ah. And you could do that on like the label, for instance.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of properties on new lines.
Yeah. So if you just wanted to expand them out into separate lines, does a very, very simple collapse.
Yeah.
And I'll just add some more properties, so.
Like font size.
Oop, I'm actually not in anything. So if we added like blue automation ID label. You notice how things are misaligned at the moment, they're out of order. So we can sort them, and it reorders them. So that will do it based on namespace, and then name by alphabetically.
Nice.
So it just keeps things tidy.
I like that.
We've also got some redundant white space there as well. So if we wanted to, we can actually organize the whole document in one hit. And just to demonstrate how that works, I'll just kind of put things
all randomly.
Put things out of line.
Yeah.
So that'll use the same formatting convention to the split onto separate lines. And we can just tidy the whole document up in one hit.
That is beautiful.
And it just keeps things clean.
Yeah.
So I've been using this on the app at my workplace just to make things more readable.
Yeah, yeah. I like that.
Because it's easy for things to drift.
It is, especially when people open up source code in different IDEs and different spaces versus tabs, and everyone should just replace tabs with spaces. That's just me.
Yeah.
But hotly debated.
Yeah.
There's going to be all the comments on this episode will be like, tabs.
You're starting another tabs versus spaces flame war.
Yes, always. Classic.
Yeah. So I guess I'll go into some more code generation.
Yeah, let's do it.
Something that I've been using quite a lot is the ability to generate bindable properties.
Okay.
So I have been doing a lot of refactoring and taking XAML that's reusable and converting it into our own custom controls.
Oh, sure.
So it's like consider, for instance, that label was going to be reusable throughout the app and had some like certain behavior, like it said did a toast or something when you clicked on it. What we can do is we can make a new control. So I'll make a new infractor label. So this part is manual.
So essentially, if I was creating a new, when I create custom controls, I go in like, this is my label, this is my, whatever, this is a bounce button, for instance, I think, and when you click it, it bounces and does some animations. That would be kind of the idea here, right?
Yeah. And I'm just adding a dot controls. I'll demonstrate something very shortly. So you notice that this is all misaligned.
Mm-hmm.
I actually don't like that, so I can pretty simply just format the entire document again.
Yeah.
It's actually opened it in the wrong one. Yep, there we go.
There we go, cool.
And I'll add my label, and I'll give that an X name of label. All right, So let's get started, and we'll say that I want to replace this label with my label with the mFractal label. So let's make a new controls namespace, and we'll link that to the mFractal label. So something we can do here is we can import controls. This is very, very useful when you're working with an external control library. You know the name of a control, and you want it to, you want to make a new namespace for it.
Yeah.
So you just pull in the assembly namespace for you.
Got it.
So we can just right click on that yellow span and do an import operation. Mm. And then I'll just actually sort it.
Always be sorting.
Always be sorting.
Yeah. Need a keyboard shortcut for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So controls, we can import them.
Got it. Cool.
Just makes things very, very easy. So yeah. I use FFimage loading quite a lot.
Yeah.
And I'll copy that throughout the pages. And rather than having to go and copy the namespace import, I can just do a right-click import.
Got it.
And it saves a lot of time.
Got it. Cool.
And I'll just expand that out to separate lines. Where are we? I like things. Keeping things clean. So you notice here that we have two missing properties because our mFractal label, that's actually a content view.
Okay. Do you need to change the class on that at all inside the XAML to the dot controls and namespaces? Does it know that? Because the code behind of the, you have the dot controls, right?
Yep. This is here?
Yep. And then the namespace there is dot controls. Is there inside the XAML, do you have to change that at all?
I've already done it. Oh, have I? No, I haven't. I have not done it. Yes.
Got it.
Good catch.
Good catch, yeah.
Good pair programming.
I've done this a few times.
Yep.
Yep.
So we don't have the text and text color property.
No, we've changed the namespace.
No, I have to re-import it.
Yeah. See, that's actually nifty because you're changing namespaces, and it knows that, hey, you changed the namespace, and now you can go re-import it.
See, it just caught a bug for me.
Yep, like, see?
Before I even knew it. All right, and then we just sort it.
There we go.
Okay.
Beautiful.
So we want to make a text and text color property.
Yeah.
Like something we can bind to and change the content. Mm-hmm. Something we can bind to and change the color.
Got it.
So historically, the way we'd have to do this, and I actually don't remember how to do this, so apologies for this, because I haven't done it this way for about four or five months now.
Yeah.
You'd have to go in here, make a bindable property declaration.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, it's long. It's long. I copy and paste from the documentation.
Yeah, so it's hard. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that mFractal adds is the ability to generate bindable properties, and it will resolve the type converter, like all the type information for you as well.
Okay.
So there's two ways we can do it. We can either right-click on the spans and do it one by one. So right-click, fix. We can either make a property, or we can make a bindable property.
Oh, cool.
So if we did a bindable property, opens up the insertion point, and
boom,
just does everything for us.
Very nice.
However, when I'm refactoring, I can have like 3 to 4 to 5 to 6, however many properties at once.
You can just keep let's say you're creating a custom control, you might just expand this and just have a bunch of them. And you're like, I just want to work on what my control is going to look like, and then I'll figure it out later, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or like you've taken a control that's been bound to and it's got all these binding expressions, but you want to make it reusable.
Got it.
So you end up replacing the binding expressions with bindable properties.
Yeah.
And then in your actual XAML file where you're using the control, you end up with like 7 or 8properties that don't exist yet.
Don't exist yet, yeah.
So the workflow that I'm pushing for now is to just right-click and implement the missing members. Mm. So this will gather all the missing properties and then implement them all as bindable properties.
Boom.
So that has saved me, like, I don't even know how much work.
Yeah.
I don't remember how to do this stuff anymore because I haven't been I haven't done it manually for months.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, auto-generate that, right? Like, no need for it. I mean, that's why I used a lot of, like, we have code snippets, right, for instance.
Yeah.
It's like, code snippets are so I don't have to remember how to do all of this, you know, shenanigans that's in there.
It's like, you have to remember to make a static property. You have to remember the
binding, the create syntax.
Do all this.
You get to use a lot of these new fancy nameup features, which is nice.
Yeah.
Yep. Do it right.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool.
So it just saves a lot of time.
Yeah.
And now because they exist, mFractal inspects your XAML again, and it detects that it's all resolved.
Very cool.
Easy peasy.
Easy peasy.
Yep. I guess there's a few other bits and pieces as well. I've been adding some code generation for XAML. So I add resource dictionaries fairly frequently. Mm-hmm. So you can right click on the root element and make a dictionary declaration. If we were going to make a value converter to take the message and convert it to something else.
Yeah, often inside your resource dictionary, you have an app level and then a page level. So you start to bring in all of these converters over and over and over again. And often they have to pair with the namespace because maybe you're using a helper library and in other, they're elsewhere. And then you got to remember everything, give them keys and all this stuff, right?
So. Yeah. So what we can do here is we can generate a key for the resource. Just nice and quick.
Yep.
And then we can implement it as well. So there's a few different options depending on the naming you've chosen. But in my case, I usually like I'll generate value converters from source code. So you can just quickly make the converter.
Yep. I like that.
And then we can just do string is null or empty. That'll take the string to a Boolean.
Yep.
And I have a certain gripe with converters. I don't like that they're not type safe. So there's no way of knowing what goes in and what goes out.
Yeah.
Without actually cracking open the source code or reading documentation.
Sure.
So I've been pushing to add a value conversion attribute. So this is based on WPF's convention. So that they already have one of these.
Oh, okay.
So I've already predefined this in my source code. So the basic premise is you define the type that comes in and the type that comes out. Mm-hmm. And then you add that to your converter. So pretty easy, just value conversion type of string, and its output type is a Boolean.
So this is essentially saying, hey, listen, this converter, what I'm expecting is a string is going to come in, I'm going to return, because everything is an object. That was the thing with value conversion.
Yeah.
Everything's an object, and you got to do all this casting, and which is fine, But yeah, so this is saying string's coming in, a bool's coming out, which is actually nice for documentation, but also when team members come in, they're like, what is, I know it's string to bool, so hopefully it's a little, little bit, but still, when you start to get these crazy, this is a speaker to something else, and you're like, what is it even doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I've got an address formatter, for instance.
Yeah.
Like or a workflow progress, and it's not actually clear on what it's doing. Like, does it expect an enum or a string? Like, what's it returning? Is it like a color? Is it an object?
Yeah. So what does this give us then?
So if we jump back into the XAML, there's a few things it does. So first of all, we can actually view what the converter's intent is. So in the tooltip, there's value conversion information now. So the input type and the output type. So that's documented in the XAML for when you're using it.
Nice.
Which is a big plus.
Yep.
And if we're going to apply that to something, and for instance, we linked it up with a static resource. It also gives us type safety on the conversion flow. So message is a string. So the string to bool converter is expecting a string. So that part works. However, we're returning into a text property, which is also a string. So if we highlight it over that, it's a string.
It's a big no-no.
Yeah, it's going to break at runtime, basically. Yep. So what mFractor does is it uses that annotation, and it inspects the input type and the output type of the binding.
Oh, cool.
And then says what the issue is going to be.
Yeah, because it knows your binding, it knows your type. And if you change that to something like is enabled or something like that, right? Which is a Boolean binding, essentially then we're literally taking this.
Then
this
it will resolve.
Boom, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it just keeps things simple.
Yeah.
Well, prevents you from getting stung by this stuff at runtime.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So cool. Anything else in that are like you want to show off in the XAML editing?
I think the XAML editing, like, I've covered a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. We just cover like, we're going to have like awesome, I'll timestamp all of these too, so you really can jump to all these different points, which is very cool.
Yeah, there's a lot more that I haven't even touched, but I don't think we have time to go over everything.
Yeah, I did want to do one thing before we wrapped up is I'm a big Android person.
Yep.
It's my favorite platform to develop for. And you showed me before the show some small little things that mFractor will do for you. So, and there is, the nice thing about Xamarin, even if you're in Xamarin Forms, is sometimes you got to go into the Android project.
Yeah, you do.
So what little things have you done inside of here?
Well, I guess we'll start with navigation as well. So tooltips and GoTo declaration support for resources. Mm-hmm. So that was something that really pained me.
Yeah.
Like back when I was working in Android. So you can hover over drawables, you can hover over the resource.layouts, and instead of rendering the integer ID, it renders out what the file will be.
Got it. I see you can even go to declaration. So if it was an ID, does it know how to go to the ID?
It does know how to go to the ID.
Oh my goodness. There probably isn't one, but if there was.
Let's find one.
Yeah.
Resource.id. We'll find one here. So you can jump to the layout as well. Mm. So that was just Command-D that I pressed.
Got it.
So actually,
Sliding tabs.
Yeah, let's grab the sliding tabs. And it will also, that's just a mega hack so that it doesn't give me a warning.
Yeah. Oh, there's a temp below too.
Yeah. So it'll tell you it's an ID. It'll tell you where it's at and the control that it uses.
Got it.
And then we can also press Command-D and jump to it. Because it's the design editor interferes a little bit.
Yeah.
But if we're using a string, for instance, it'll just take you straight to the declaration.
To the resource, yeah.
Yeah.
Got it, which is super nice.
Yeah, so that's a big time saver.
Yeah.
Next thing is IntelliSense for all resources.
Yeah.
So this is for values, for menus, for XML XML configurations, drawables. There's a lot.
Yeah.
I think the manifest has tooltips and stuff as well.
Yeah.
So just makes things easier to work with.
Yeah. So if you do like a new string inside of there, will it fill in your like name and all that stuff for you then? Yeah. Oh, and it tells you all the properties inside. Yeah. That's super nice. Yeah. Often I'm just like copying and pasting, but often it's so hard for me to remember. Is it int or is it bool or is it boolean or like what's the actual, you know, especially like string arrays. A lot of devs may not go into that type of a flow, but like when you get really complex on huge projects, you're like, oh, these little tiny little things.
And it all adds up. Like you sink time into it.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Anything else? So right now, you get it, you can download it. It's free?
It's free.
It's free currently.
Yeah, free currently.
Currently, got it.
The expected way things will go, I'll continue supporting Xamarin Studio until the very end.
Yes.
And when Visual Studio for Mac becomes the endorsed product.
Yeah, out of preview. Yeah,
I will release for that with a free trial for mFractor. And it will be a paid product as well.
Got it. Very cool.
Yeah,
so right now, download it, give it a chance, give it a try, get feedback. How do people get feedback on it?
So two ways. Yeah. There's a Xamarin Slack channel.
Okay.
And beneath that is an mFractor channel. So if you jump into that.
I'll put it in the show notes.
And just ping at Matthew Robbins. I'll say hello and welcome you to the channel, and then you can just tell me whatever you want.
Got it.
But the easier way is to just hit me up over Twitter.
Got it.
So at Matthew R. Dev.
Cool. And we'll put Matthew's Twitter account, the Slack channel, how to get mFractor, all this good stuff in the show notes below. Well, thank you for coming all the way out to beautiful, sunshiny Seattle.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, go download it, give it a try, especially if you're using Xamarin Studio. And I'm sure if you want Visual Studio for Mac, just hit them up on the Slack. But until next time, I'm James Montemagno, and this is the Xamarin Show, and thank you so much for watching.